bald eagles, like so many other creatures in Iowa, were hunted out of existence. By 1900, there were no eagles nesting in the state. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Wildlife biologist Jim Pease will be here today to help us understand the history of this majestic bird. We'll talk about the pressures that nearly drove them to extinction and their amazing comeback story. We'll also talk about their life cycle, domestic habits, relationships, distinctive markings, and what they eat. We'll do a survey of nesting pairs in the state and talk about the dangers that bald eagles still face in Iowa. We'll also talk about what you can do to give them a hand. Best of all, we'll talk about how easy they are to see in the wintertime, where you should go, and what you should do to eye eagles in Iowa. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we're going to talk about the bald eagle, their near annihilation, amazing comeback, their life cycle, and the pressures and dangers that they still face today. Jim Pease is an environmental interpretive and wildlife consultant based in Ames, and he's here with us today. Hello, Jim.
Good morning, Charity.
It seems like we're always telling the same story when we talk about about a wild animal on this show. They disappeared from Iowa, and now they're making a comeback. But
there's a certain truth in that. That's I hadn't thought about it that way, but you're probably right. Yeah, we do tend to dwell on things that have disappeared. But you know, in a way, it really is a success story, and that's one of the reasons I like to talk about that, because I think it shows what, as a society, we can do if we put our minds and our laws to it. You know, if we say we're going to do something for the right reasons and we go ahead and do it, man, it turns out wildlife responds pretty well. And I think that's a good story to tell.
Well, and the eagle story is a little bit different from some of the other stories in that the early story is about the same. People hunted them
right
to the verge of extinction. And it's hard to imagine somebody shooting
really,
a bald eagle.
Yeah.
It's really hard. But what did people hunt them for?
Well, that's a good question. Basically, I think, you know, we're talking here in the mid to late 1800s, virtually anything that moved in this land, it seemed like, was wanted for one reason or another, for decoration, for hats, for its fur, for its meat, just because it was there, that sort of thing. It was perceived as a threat to pioneers, and you know, you can go through a whole litany of things, and certainly for bald eagles, it was they were a big hawk, and probably being a large critter, and we're talking here, about a 10-pound bird with very large talons that are extremely strong, very very strong, and probably they did take an occasional lamb or a young goat or something like that, but were perceived as a threat by pioneers, and I'm sure that they were shot wantonly.
Well, and people actually thought that they could carry off small children.
Yes, those sorts of things perpetuated quite easily in pioneer times, just as they do today in coffee shop talk and that sort of thing. But certainly they didn't do that, but that was the perception. And so there were all kinds of critters that went through this sort of persecution in the late 1800s. And as you mentioned, I think, in the introduction to the program, you know, by around 1900, 1902, somewhere around in there, we no longer had them nesting again. They didn't nest anymore in Iowa. And in fact, over most of the United States, the Audubon Society did a really complete survey of the lower 48 states in the 1960s. And they figured that by 1963, there were only about a total of 400 nests in the lower 48 states, total for all 48 states. And most of those were in very isolated places like the Boundary Waters Canoe Area, which wasn't the Boundary Waters Canoe Area yet, in northern Minnesota, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and very isolated areas in the West.
Well, and then for the eagles, it didn't stop there. Even when they weren't around to be shot, people kept doing things that put additional pressures on them. And of course, most of us know a little bit about the dangers of pesticides for eagles, but explain it for us.
Yeah, the dangers of some pesticides are particularly for critters that are in the sort of the top of the food pyramid, the last step in the food chain. Because there were certain chemicals at that time, there still are today, but the chemicals that we were most concerned about were the ones that Rachel Carson was talking about way back when she wrote Silent Spring. And she was roundly condemned for it by much of the scientific community, in part because she was a woman, and in part because she brought news that people didn't want to hear. They thought DDT and other organochlorines pesticides were new miracles, and in many ways they were, because they allowed us to grow food in areas that we wouldn't have been able to without them. They really were broad spectrum, but they persisted in the food chain. They tended to build up in the fat reserves of each critter along the way, and by the time it got to things like eagles, big fish-eating birds like eagles and ospreys, brown pelicans, it had built up to the point in their systems where it was thinning the eggshells. It interfered with the calcium uptake and deposition into eggshells, and so the eggshells were so thin that when they would sit on them, they would crack. And so it was a very, very difficult problem. And of course, Rachel Carson didn't see that so much in Silent Spring as she saw the disappearance of other birds, things like the American robin. it's hard to imagine that sort of a thing. But, you know, when I was a child growing up in the 60s in southeastern Iowa on the Mississippi, my brother and I would go down to the Mississippi very early in the morning before sunrise and crawl into a sort of a makeshift blind, and we'd be able to watch bald eagles fish in the open water of the heating plant, or the electric plant had a cooling area, and they would discharge water into the river, so it kept an open area of water there. And we would watch them. And of course, almost every bird we saw was an adult bald eagle, because there were so few young being produced.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. When I think about that, I was thinking about that in preparation for this program and thinking, that was a pretty incredible time when we think about it. We were actually able to still see some in the wintertime. Certainly not in the summer, because again they didn't nest here. But we saw them in the winter because of that open water.
Well, we do talk a lot about bald eagles and that pesticide pressure, and you mentioned the osprey and the other birds at the top of the food chain.
Mm-hmm.
Did the other species of birds, like golden eagle and other birds, get as low in population as the bald eagle did? Do we pay more attention to the bald eagle just because it's our national symbol?
Yes, they did, and not everything did, but certainly things that were particularly fish-dependent birds, those are the ones that seem to be the most dramatically affected. There were certainly other birds that were affected as well, but things like peregrine falcons and that were impacted as well. But it was really the buildup through the food chain, through the aquatic food chain. And so birds that were especially fish-dependent were the ones who you saw the most dramatic effects in. But I think you're right. I think that some of that was because it was designated as the national symbol clear back in 1782, that we paid more attention to it. By the way, not everybody agreed that the eagle should be the national symbol. School children probably know that Ben Franklin... He didn't want the the bald eagle as the national symbol. He wanted the wild turkey.
The noble turkey.
That's right. That's right. He thought it was much better because of what eagles eat versus what... Now, it would be kind of interesting to think about all the ways that we use that national symbol today and replace it with a turkey as opposed to to the bald eagle. And it's quite interesting.
Well, I bet we would portray the turkey in different ways.
Yeah, I think
you're right. You see a lot of cartoon turkeys out there.
That's right. I think we might portray it differently, and we might not have it for Thanksgiving either. So
that's true, but I don't think we'd be eating eagle instead, at least.
Right, no.
So when did they start to reappear in the lower 48?
Well, it's very fascinating because, as I said, Rachel Carson wanted the organochlorine pesticides DDT and several others banned. And she was roundly condemned for it. And it finally came to pass after her death by not quite a decade, in 1972-73, Congress finally passed the law that in a period in which there was a lot of this Earth Day started in 1970, so there was a very strong environmental awareness even in Congress. And they did ban it beginning in 1972-73. Banning its use in the United States, which was a substantial change from the way things had been. By the way, they didn't ban its manufacture. So manufacturing is still done today, and it's sold to other countries, which seems to be a bit of a double standard to me, but maybe it's just me. But it is still banned in the United States today. And it's amazing how quickly things began to respond. Once you remove this from active use in the system, by the late 70s, we actually had a single nest in northeastern Iowa, right along the Mississippi River, and maintained pretty much one to two nests for a number of years. And it wasn't until the mid-1980s, it gradually increased until about the mid-1980s, very, very slowly, another nest here or there, but almost always along the Mississippi. And then in the mid-90s, it seemed to, about 1996, it seemed to suddenly just grow exponentially. And it wasn't just nests began to appear in other places in Iowa. All we really did, it had been protected for a long time, but all we really did was ban the organochlorine pesticides like DDT, and amazingly, the bird responded. And, 25 years ago, you probably couldn't have convinced me, Charity, that we would ever have substantial numbers of eagles nesting in Iowa. I thought eagles were too wild, and Iowa was far too tame to ever have, big numbers. And I thought, well, when we do, they'll certainly just be along the two major rivers in the Missouri and the Mississippi. Boy, was I wrong.
Well, we will find out how wrong you were in just a moment.
Okay.
Stephanie Shepherd is going to join us from the Iowa DNR to do a survey of nesting sites in the state of Iowa. And we will continue talking about the bald eagle with Jim Pease, wildlife consultant, wildlife biologist, in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Like an eagle to the sea.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest today is Jim Pease, an environmental interpretive and wildlife consultant based in Ames. And we're talking about the American bald eagle today. And we've covered a lot of their history, the fact that they were hunted to oblivion in Iowa and gradually are making a comeback, actually not so gradually anymore, but they gradually made a comeback from the 1970s through today. And Stephanie Shepherd is now with us on the phone. She's with the Iowa DNR Wildlife Diversity Program. Hello, Stephanie.
Hello.
Thank you so much for calling.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Can you tell us how many nesting sites there are for bald eagles in the state of Iowa today?
Sure, I can tell you what we know. We certainly don't have a comprehensive idea of all the nesting sites in Iowa, because we don't have a survey that looks at all the different sites. But in 2010, we had 266 territories, bald eagle nest sites that were reported on. And since 1977, we've had 482 territories reported on. You know, some of them are now currently inactive, but, that kind of gives you an idea of roughly how many sites we have around the state.
What kind of habitat do bald eagles nest in?
They generally need, traditionally, and what we would think is ideal, eagle habitat would be big river, lots of food resources with, big cottonwoods, really robust nesting trees, because their nests can get up to, one or two tons in weight. They add to them each year, and they just get bigger and bigger and bigger. So they need a really big, robust tree to be able to take that kind of weight. As an example, certainly the highest concentration of nesting eagles in the state is the Upper Mississippi Refuge, particularly in Allamaquie County, there along the river, and Clayton County. So I think Allamaquie County has had 97 nests recorded in that area.
What can landowners do in Iowa to make their land more attractive as nesting sites?
Well, I mean, some of it is a little out of their control. If they don't live on a big waterway and don't have those trees, certainly not cutting trees along riparian zones, particularly big cottonwoods and stuff like that. Leaving those big trees there is a big thing, and just not disturbing those riparian zones, those zones along the river.
And if they find a nest on their land, are there any steps that they should take to make sure that it stays there?
First of all, is to minimize disturbance as much as possible. Eagles, particularly during March and April, during that part of the nesting season, are really jumpy. And so they really don't like to be disturbed in any way during that early part of the nesting season. And if they do get disturbed, they will a lot of times abandon the nest, and that's kind of it for the year. They're done for the year, and they may not even return if it was, the first time they were trying to nest there. So by minimizing disturbance, I mean not getting too close to the nest, observing the nest from afar as much as possible, and certainly, not doing anything near the nest that would have, loud noises or a lot of disruption.
Well, Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us today. And Jim, do you have any questions for Stephanie before
I was going to ask Steph, of the 266 territories, any idea how many of those were active nests?
Yeah, about 75% of them were reported as active. And those are opportunistic, so, mm-hmm. people may be more likely to report on an active nest versus an inactive nest. And I guess I'd like to say that just so that people know that we definitely, that information on inactiveness is just as important as, knowing about the activeness. But,
sure.
About 75% of those 266 territories were active.
So something in the neighborhood of 200 nests. And so it seems to have been, after this sort of exponential increase, it seems to sort of be leveling off in the neighborhood of 200 nests, although there seem to be more territories that are also defended, eh?
Right, and we had 47 territories that were newly reported in 2010, and the last couple years has been around 60 new nests and that kind of thing. And these aren't necessarily nests that were built that year, but they were reported new in that year. So we're still adding new territories for sure, and they're actually we're talking about the ideal habitat, but we have them showing up in some not so ideal places too, and they seem to be actually being successful in some of those marginal sites as well.
One of the aspects of the wildlife diversity program for which you work that I think is really, really a wonderful addition to Iowa is the aspect of citizen science and allowing citizens to participate in this. Could you want to talk a little bit about how citizens can participate in the nest monitoring program?
Sure, I would love to, and I would just have to say and send out a big thank you to all of those citizens that have been helping us with this data, because most of this data is the result of people volunteering and opportunistically reporting these nests. This is not, you know, all data from our staff. A lot of this is from volunteers and from citizens. And we do have a sort of structured program right now where certain of the territory, bald eagle territories around the state, have been designated as official monitoring sites. And those nests need to be assigned a permanent nest monitor who will, you know, visit the site three times during the nesting season and collect certain data on whether it's active, whether they have and produce young. And we're going to be adding some additional territories this coming year, so we will definitely need more monitors. And we're actually holding three training workshops in the spring in March around the state. There's going to be one in Jackson County, one in Warren County, and one in Palo Alto County that folks will need to go through to get trained in order to be a bald eagle nest monitor, as well as collect data on some other of our important species like other raptors and colonial water birds as well. But we really could not, you know, we're a small program and we could not, collect the data that we have without the help of citizen scientists and from volunteers. So,
right.
Stephanie,
so,
before you go, with a lot of the other large predators that have been reintroduced or made a comeback, wolves, mountain lions, there are people who get really nervous having them around, and even people in Iowa sometimes feel nervous having coyotes around. Mm-hmm. Have there been people who have complained about bald eagles as a nuisance species?
Not really. I did this year get my first call from someone who was not feeling really antagonistic about the eagles. They weren't, but they were having a problem with damage. They had watched an eagle, take a baby lamb and on their farm. And so they were concerned. They did not want to harm the bird. They were, didn't have quite the huge negative feelings that some people have about those other species. But we very rarely get complaints about eagles and about them interfering with, you know, with folks in a way that makes them really angry. People generally just love these birds, a lot of them, to a really huge degree. So they're willing to accept, their predatory nature.
One of the things, Charity, about bald eagles is that they're opportunistic. They are a big predator, and as I said, they primarily eat fish. But they're opportunistic feeders, like yeah. most big predators are, and they'll take carrion, dead animals. You'll even occasionally see them feeding on the side of the road over a deer carcass or a raccoon, something like that. And they will feed if they're given the opportunity. I've seen them many times in fields where people have spread manure during the wintertime on frozen ground, and sounds kind of gross to some folks, I'm sure, to some of our listeners, but they'll take dead fetal pigs, dead baby pigs, and put them in the manure spread them on the field with the manure, and eagles will come along and feed on them. I remember a number of years ago now, sometime in the last 10 years, in which eagles were therefore trained by feeding on the discarded carcasses of pigs to take baby pigs when they were in the field. So we had inadvertently trained them to do it, and so they did become a depredation problem. So we have to be careful with the kinds of things we think we're doing them a favor by putting food out for them, when in fact we're actually doing a disservice to them in the long run.
Well, Stephanie, thank you so much for joining the show today.
Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot. Have a great day.
You
Thanks,
too.
Steph.
Bye-bye.
Now, Jim, let's talk about eagles and their life cycle, because mm-hmm. I know that we get an opportunity now to really see what goes on in eagle nests. And I was I was an addict of the Decora Eagle Cam.
Yes, that's right.
last year.
Somehow I knew you would be.
The three eaglets in the nest all last spring. I watched it with my kids. So we really get an opportunity to really see how eagles live. But tell us a little bit about their domestic life.
Well, when the eggs actually will start being laid as early as some nests are being will be prepared within the next month or so, and some eagles will actually begin laying eggs in even in January, as cold as odd as that seems. Majority of them will nest later than that. They take about a month, 35 days or so, to hatch, and then are they're not precocial. They're atricial. That means that they're sort of born with very limited abilities. They have to be fed by their parents. They can't fly. They can't get out of the nest. And they'll stay in the nest for a number of weeks until they become branchers and get out on the nest edge and kind of exercise their wings and that. And so they don't really fledge for quite a few weeks after they've about 6 weeks after they've hatched.
And
so,
about how many eggs do they usually lay?
Well, they'll lay one to four usually, and the average, this is one of the things that I've looked at the data that have been presented from previous eagle surveys here in Iowa, and the average output from active nests is about an average of 1.5 young. So some nests will have one young that survives, some will have two. So you get an average of it's rare to have three, as you observed last year in the eagle cam. But we don't know, because they don't all hatch on exactly the same day. There's usually one that hatches a little bit earlier. That's the one that gets fed first, starts growing quicker. So there's usually, as is the case in many raptor type birds, that they one tends to be the dominant bird, and if any are going to survive, it's going to be that one out of the
And there's the group. A pretty high mortality rate?
Yeah, there is. In eagles, less so, because they're fed usually by both parents, both parents participate in the incubation and in the raising of the young. So less of a problem there than there are when they're single parenting going on, and there are in many species.
Well, we have some domestic chit-chat from an eagle's nest.
Oh, good.
Here, so we can hear what they sound like. They're coming back.
Sound almost gull-like there.
Huh? Right. And the sounds of eagles, of course, that's in the nest, chatting with each other. But,
right.
You know, when you watch them flying, you expect a much bigger sound to come out of an eagle.
In fact, if you watch the old Westerns, they use that cry, which is not an eagle at all. It's from a red-tailed hawk.
It's about
that's what they put on the movies
size.
All the time.
Right.
Because it wasn't dramatic enough, that the sort of chicken-like or gull-like calls that the bald eagle has is not good enough for the movies. So they dub in another call. So
and the juveniles, they sort of tweet like baby birds do.
Like just, baby birds.
Just
that's,
as many of the large raptors. I know hearing a tweeting sound coming out of a great horned owl is kind of a surreal experience.
Right.
And they tweet, 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 tweet.
Yep.
It's very sweet. But what kind of sounds do they make as they grow?
I'm not familiar with the different stages of their sounds as they grow, but it never gets to the point where they are screaming as we hear red tails do from roadsides and as I say in the movies. But the bald eagles never get to the point where they are screamers or loud vocalizers. In fact, stealth is their best survival technique. So making lots of sounds. They're not like songbirds where they're calling to one another or even like owls. Owls are beginning to prepare for, great horns especially, will be nesting in January and laying eggs in January here in Iowa. And they're territorial right now, and if you get out on a nice crisp night like last night or the last several nights, you'll hear great horned owls calling to one another quite readily. Eagles are not that way, and the vocalizations are not important in their courtship or their discovery of one another along the way, like as it is in songbirds and a number of other species.
Now, you said that it takes several weeks for them to fledge, for them to become branchers and then learn to fly. Mm-hmm. How long do mom and dad keep bringing the food to the young?
You know, it's amazing. You think about teenagers and college students, and you know, even into their 20s now, moving back home and still feeding off mom and dad if they can, or they have to. To be fair, a lot of raptors are the same way. They will, even though they can fly on their own. When you think about it, though, it does make some sense. They will stay with mom and dad through the summer months and actually learn how to feed by themselves. And when you see an eagle swoop down from a branch or after soaring over the swoop down over a river, and without necessarily dipping themselves in the river, just coming down on that surface, grabbing that fish and swooping back up without missing a wing beat, it takes some skill. And it takes a while to learn how to do that. They don't make it every time. They sometimes land in the water and have to get back out of the water before they get totally soaked. It's a difficult technique to learn, and so it does make some sense that mom and dad would feed them through the summer months and probably well into the fall.
My guest today is Jim Pease. He's an environmental interpretive and wildlife consultant based in Ames, and we're talking about the American bald eagle today. And you're welcome to join our conversation, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Neppe. My guest today is Jim Pease. He's an environmental interpretive and wildlife consultant based in Ames. And today we're talking about bald eagles. So we got the bald eagles through the summer there, Jim, before we took a break. But how long does it take a bald eagle to start looking like a bald eagle?
Well, it depends what you mean by looking. You're looking like an adult bald eagle. It takes 4 to 5 years. It seems that the white tail is the last thing to come, and to develop in a bird in the bald eagle. And so take that. That's 4 to 5 years, and so they're really in this sort of juvenile. I'm sort of on my own stage for a number of years before they become fully adult and capable of setting up a territory and attracting a mate and those sorts of things. They do migrate, and in fact, in the fall of the year, late fall, usually they will migrate further south. Most of the birds that we have in Iowa in the summer are probably not here through the winter. We don't know for sure, except through some banding data, but they seem to go farther south to spend the winter. And you say, well, gee, we see lots of birds around here during the winter. Those are birds from farther north that nest up in Canada, Minnesota, northern states to our north, as well as into Canada, and come down here because it's such a balmy time.
time I'm of enjoying year. That right now.
That's right. Temperatures around zero. You know, it's balmy compared to what it is up there. Having lived in northern Alberta, where it would get down to 35 to 50 below commonly at nights. It is balmy. Zero, believe me, is feels pretty balmy. It also means then that we have opportunity for open water, and that's in fact what attracts them. I mentioned early in the program that I used to watch them blow a electrical plant south of Burlington, and where water was cooling system water was put back into the river, so it kept an area open for eagles. Well, in Iowa, we have a number of places where there is open water all winter, and that's below locks and dam along the Mississippi, dams along the Mississippi. There are lots of other smaller dams on smaller river systems, including flood control dams like on Sailorville and Red Rock and those sorts of areas.
And the Iowa River in Iowa City. I
that's
saw
right.
two eagles on my way into work.
Yes, I saw one on the skunk. I thought it was a good omen. And many of the smaller rivers, even though they may not be dammed, they are open for much of the winter, as the skunk is right now, in sections. And those sections allow the eagles in to fish. They also allow other waterfowl, especially now geese, to accumulate around those areas. And eagles will feed on geese as well, particularly if they can find one. I wasn't sure if the one I saw this morning was really looking for fish or eyeing all of the Canada geese across the road, thinking, wonder if one of those is injured, you know, because they will take waterfowl, particularly injured or small waterfowl when they get a chance.
Now, eagles are another one of those birds that we say mate for life. Is that true?
Well, yes and no. They certainly are they have very strong pair bonds, and if one or the other does get killed for, you know, or dies of old age, whatever, they will find another mate, or they can find another mate. But generally, they have very, very strong pair bonds, and they do maintain long-term relationships, let's put it that way. So.
And how long do eagles live?
Well, in captivity, they certainly have lived upwards of 20, 25 years. In the wild, like most large raptorial birds, 10 to 15 years is a very good long lifespan for them.
Rachel is on the line from Coon Rapids, and she wants to bring up one of the very serious issues, that a danger that is still facing bald eagles in Iowa today. Hello, Rachel.
Hello.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I have a friend who's a raptor rehabilitator in Dedham, and when I've been over at her place, she's getting a huge number of bald eagles who are coming in dying of lead poisoning.
Lead poisoning, yeah.
Yeah, they're scavenging on the deer carcasses, and the lead ammunition is fragmenting, and then they suffocate to death, basically. The lead is binding with the oxygen in their blood. And I've seen her with, you know, 6-7 dead bald eagles there. She had 19 cases come in just last year.
Boy,
so I'm a deer hunter myself, and I've been feeding mostly venison to my children. So I've been reading the literature now, and it turns out that the ammunition fragments more than people thought. So not only are we poisoning our bald eagles, we're potentially poisoning our own families by using lead ammo to shoot deer. So my family and all of my friends, we've switched over to copper ammunition now.
Right. Have you had difficulty finding the copper ammunition?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
No.
Okay, that's what a lot of people have complained about, is that it is more difficult to find, particularly in smaller towns where the ammunition is at a local supplier kind of thing, and they don't always get the more expensive copper or other non-toxic ammo. But you're exactly right. That is one of the big threats to eagles right now.
Well, and Jim, how big is the threat?
Well, as I said, the eagles are scavengers, and if they find a deer carcass that for one reason or another wasn't collected by the hunter, and it was shot and the lead shot is in it, they will ingest it along with other critters as well, other scavengers. So I think it is a real threat. It's not certainly the threat that DDT was, the widespread use, almost cavalier use of the miracle pesticide. But it certainly is a threat, and if like Kay over in Dedham, when you see eagles coming in with lead poisoning and trying to help them recover, is very, very difficult. How successful has she been, Rachel?
Well, she tries to give them chelation therapy. It costs $500 per bird.
There you go.
But just about all of them die anyway.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, the 26 bald eagles that died in rehabilitators' hands last year in Iowa, that's only a fraction of the birds that are dying out in the wild.
Sure.
So, yeah. You know, I'm pretty concerned about it. And in terms of finding the ammo, well, I just talked to our local hardware store in advance, and they make sure and stock the copper slugs.
That's great. Yeah.
Everyone here around in our area now knows about the problem, and we've all switched over.
Good. Good. So what you're saying is that it's a matter of educating the suppliers as well as the hunters to switch to copper.
Well, yeah. If we're going to use copper, we talk to them in advance and make sure they've got it, you know, on hand for us.
Right.
And we're really happy with the performance of the copper slugs. There's no, you know, they aren't that much more expensive, and they work great. And
good.
We know that we're protecting both the eagles and our families.
Terrific.
Rachel, thank you so much for calling.
Okay, thank you.
Jim, are there other threats to bald eagles right now?
Yeah, I would say there certainly are. They've been removed from the endangered species list. Doesn't mean they're not protected. There are lots of other laws that protect them as a national symbol, and those will always be there anyway. They're no longer protected by endangered species list, but there are enough other laws that will still be okay. But as with any species, I think the threats are habitat, and habitat. Stephanie mentioned the logging of very large trees. The need for we're talking big trees here, big cottonwoods and big silver maples and sometimes big white pines, depending on where they are. Those are the kinds of trees that they have to build these nests. And I don't know if you caught this, but their nests. They add to the nest each year. They have very strong site tenacity. They come back. They tend to come back, unless there's disturbance, year after year to the same nest site, and they simply add to the nest. And these nests, old nests, I've seen them in the Boundary Waters area, that are massive. You know, they're 6 feet or more across, and they're 10 feet deep, and they can weigh. They've taken materials and out of a nest and weighed it, and can weigh from 1 to 2 tons in the top of a tree. So that's a pretty substantial weight on a tree. So you need a large tree in order to allow that to exist. So where those trees are logged out, obviously they can't nest there. So that is a big threat. Certainly, I think the other one is not just summer habitat for nesting, but winter habitat. Winter is a tough time of year, as we know, and even though it is comparatively mild down here, as it is to farther north in central Canada right now, it is still a time at which the birds have to maintain a sufficient food supply to keep their body temperatures up at night, and they roost all night long. These are diurnal birds that come out in the daytime and fish during the daytime, not at night. And so they roost at night. And these roost sites have to be out of the wind. We did a video a number of years ago now that many people can still see at some of the Eagle Watch events that are coming up. And it talks about those winter roost sites. They often are out of the way in valleys, so they're out of the wind. They have to have substantial trees in them. So those kinds of winter roost sites as well as summer nesting sites, it is an important habitat issue. And, you know, as I say, to me it's amazing that the bird is, you know, we have around 200 nests now in the state of Iowa, and not just along the two major rivers. They're along all kinds of interior rivers across the state, practically in every county in the state, and we are a state that is rich in water resources. We have lots of streams and rivers. fortunately, and the eagles have responded to that. So I think that's the having the habitat available for them to utilize those streams and rivers is a really critical issue that we have to continually address. And since we're mainly a private land state, 98% of the land is in private ownership. It's up to private landowners to care enough to say, okay, I'm going to leave this patch of woods to mature to old age so that species like bald eagles and others that like mature woods will still be here in the future.
Jake is on the line from Des Moines. Hello, Jake.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Well, Jody and Jim, I just had a quick question regarding like the method that bald eagles would actually use to obtain wood for the nest. So I'm kind of glad that you started talking about the nesting.
So how they would actually obtain the materials that they put in the nest?
Well, because I had a small short story that basically earlier this year I'd been outside kind of just hanging out with a friend of mine, and we heard this noise like sort of like a branch breaking, and I looked behind me and I saw basically a bald eagle flying away from a large dead tree, and the dead tree was still shaking, and the bald eagle had a large dead branch seemingly from the tree itself in its talons as it was flying away. So I'm wondering if they would actually go as far as to break branches off of dead trees. Is that typical?
You bet. That is amazing. It's a great story because it's rarely seen by people. They will pick them up off the ground, but certainly if you want something strong enough to hold them, you wouldn't think that breaking it off a tree would matter. How big was this branch? About the size of your arm, your forearm?
I would estimate, the branch itself was probably about 4 to 5 feet long. I mean, it was kind of a thinner one, but it was about at least 4 feet long, and it was carrying it away. Yeah, it was bigger, a little bit, like seemingly as big as the bird, but it just, I don't know, it happened really quick, but it was really amazing, and I just wanted to call and share that story with you guys.
It's
amazing. Thanks for calling, Jake.
Great
that
story.
Is remarkable.
Great story.
Dave in Villisca has a question for you, too, Jim. Hello, Dave.
Jim, this is Dave Williams. I think I know you.
Sure.
Listen, I just wanted to make a comment and a question. We've had big eagles now on the Nottoway River for 20-some years.
Uh-huh.
And just recently, probably in the last 8 to 10 years, we've had a nest. And so I've been able to observe that, and it's great. And also, you can see that nest when it's a huge cottonwood tree. You can see that nest from a half a mile away. It's so
I'll bet.
Anyway, we see a lot of them. They fly between the Nottoway River and Viking Lake in the winter.
And are they feeding on fish in the Nottoway or on Viking Lake as well?
I think when there's open spaces, both. But okay. we have a hog farm, and so when we take that manure out, we've seen as many as 10 or 12 at a time.
Sure. Yeah, you bet. Okay.
My question was, do other parts of the geography parts of, say, South America, do they have the same problem when we had the DDT in America?
And the answer is yes. It's not as well recognized yet, although we see it in migratory birds that overwinter in Central and South America, where DDT is still used to some extent. The awareness is there in some sectors of various societies, but agriculture is still king, and it is very difficult for some concerns to stop the use of organochlorines, although some efforts are being made and some success in some countries. But yes, the wildlife still face the same threats. And we see that in birds, in reduced populations of birds that migrate to Central and South America. And each year they're getting lower and lower and lower. And so they're getting sort of hammered on both ends of their migration, habitat issues up here and still organochlorine pesticides in the south.
Dave, thank you so much for your call. And Jim, I know that this is a great time of year to see bald eagles. We've put up a link to the DNR's eagle watching guidelines on our Facebook page. We'll put it up on our web page as well, iowapublicradio.org. But any, in just a moment, about 30 seconds, any
sure.
tips for people who are headed out to see eagles?
Yeah, basically any open water, interior or along the borders of Iowa, from now through actually into March, there are lots of Eagle Days set up. Get out there, watch them, take binocs along, take your kids. It's a great way. Stay a respectful distance and stand quietly, and they will perform amazing feats for you, grabbing fish out of the water you didn't think had fish in it.
And dress warm.
Absolutely.
Jim Pease, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Jim Pease is an environmental, interpretive, and wildlife consultant based in Ames. He joins us once a month to talk about wildlife in Iowa. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Lindsay Moon. Technical support from Ben Yeager in Ames. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available on our website, iowapublicradio.org. You can email us anytime at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And tomorrow on the show, Karen Impala and Barney Sherman will be here to talk about the best new releases in folk and classical music. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.